Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Minnesota Bound podcast, the stories behind the stories. I'm Laura Shera, your co-host for today. We are celebrating our 200th episode of the Minnesota Bound podcast. So we have a special guest, Mr. Ron Shera. My dad has joined us in studio today. He's back home from Palm Springs. Dad, it's so fun to have you back.
Well, thank you.
Welcome home.
Well, thank you. It's good to be back. My backyard is full of snow, et cetera. So, but it's going to melt. And I understand we're going to talk about all of the big fish I've caught over the years. I don't know. Do we do 3-hour podcasts?
Yeah. I don't know if it would even cover 3 hours, Dad. I mean, it might be a full 24-hour, like,
this could be
podcast-a-thon.
This could be a record podcast,
yes,
frankly.
If we talk about all those trophy fish you caught.
Yeah.
But before we start talking about fishing, I think we should talk about your first hole-in-one that you got on the golf course out in Palm Springs.
Oh, well,
that had to have been exciting.
Yeah, they're creating a statue now as we speak. What do they say about even a blind hog finds an acorn? As somebody texted me after word got out that I got a hole in one, they said, what? Because I took a picture of the scorecard.
Oh, sure.
There was on the fourth hole, there was the one hole in one. And then the second hole, there was an 8 and a few other 7s and 8s.
They said, oh no.
They said, what's with the 8 next to the 1? I said, listen. I'm a lousy golfer with moments of greatness.
Well, there should be a category for that.
No, it was.
The question was, were there any witnesses to the
hole? Yes, there were three witnesses.
Okay.
Two of them were, or one of them was reliable, but there were three witnesses, not counting myself. This was about 110 yards par 3. And I'm pretty lousy hitting iron. So I have a 13 wood, it's called. And I use that because that's my 100-yard club. And I happened to whack it just beautifully. It flew high, landed on the left side of the green, bounced to the right side, towards the right side of the green, rolled down the green. And as we could see it. And as we watched it, it rolled right into the cup.
Wow.
It was over.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Did you have to like look twice? Like, did that really roll in the cup? Did you kind of look around?
Well,
did the crowd just go crazy at that
point?
Well,
yeah. And when you come that, you kind of expect it to roll
in.
Yes, well,
that's true with your level of skill.
Yeah. So anyway, that was it. And a moment of, I'll never forget. And I still have the golf ball. So I did not use it after that because there were some water hazards that I've already filled with other golf balls. So.
Sure. Well, congratulations on that. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it would be fun to have you on the podcast today just to, for our 200th episode. I can't believe we're already at 200, but to chat about some of your fun experiences with well-known celebrities, athletes, things, other people that you've had the pleasure of sharing some time in the fishing boat with, and some of the most memorable moments. I think our listeners would love to hear some of those fun adventures that you've had with some of those people.
Yeah, well, I've had quite a few, and some of them are old famous people that a lot of younger audience may not remember, but they were still in their time, very big time famous people, like Ted Williams, a famous baseball player for the Boston Red Sox. He was the last 400 hitter for a season, which has never been matched since.
It's incredible.
It is incredible. And, but he was an avid fisherman. And I got to fish with him in Isla Mirada, Florida, because he had a fondness for Minnesota people because lots of fishing here, and he was an avid fisherman. His first wife was from Princeton, Minnesota. He went through several wives, but she was the first one. And because he was so well known as a baseball player, he also made appearances at the Minneapolis Sports Show doing fly casting demonstrations.
Oh, wow.
That's how good he was. And anyway, one thing led to another. This was between his baseball managing career. He had a home on the beach in Isla Mirada, Florida, and some people that knew him mentioned me as an outdoor writer for the Tribune, and he agreed to let me come down and spend a couple of days with him. So we did, and we hit it off. Ted Williams never liked the media. He hated the press because besides asking him about some of the stupid decisions he may have made in managing a baseball game, they were asking about his ex-wives or his latest forays with women and blah, blah, blah. And so he didn't like the media, but I wrote about fishing. And so I was fine to be with. And anyway, I got down there. We went fishing for bonefish the first time right off his house. His house was right on the beach there. A bonefish is a very unique fish. You can see them, you can cast to them and use a little shrimp or fake shrimp. Initially, when he made a cast, if he didn't make a good cast, or if he hooked a bonefish and it got off, out of his mouth came a torrent of swear words that I had never heard before. It was blue smoke. I can't even repeat them in this podcast. Not that I even remember some of them, but oh my Lord.
That inner athlete needed to have the perfection of fishing as much as it was in baseball. I'm sure.
Well, he went after bonefish or any kind of fish like he did a fastball down the pike. I mean, and he was very, very competitive. And the fish was just somebody to beat.
Sure.
And this is how particular he was, though. So he landed a bonefish, nice one. We took a picture of it. He let it go. And then he took his whole spool of line off his reel and replaced it with a new spool of line. He did not want any nicks or anything to be in that old line so that the next fish might break off.
Really?
Well, that bottom is pretty shallow. You can, and there's lots of rocky, sandy things, crab shells and all kinds of stuff to nick your line. And so he knew that. So he every fish he caught, he'd replace the line on his reel. Huh?
My goodness.
Yeah.
He needed a fishing line sponsor.
But then he, while I was there, he was the fishing consultant for Sears Roebuck. And while I was there, Sears Roebuck sent a couple of engineers down to talk about the latest design for fishing reels, gearing, and everything else. And so I just sat there and listened while Ted was talking to the engineers and going through all these various names for the various gears in a reel, whatever, some of which I knew, some of which I didn't know. And Ted would say, blah, 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 to the engineers. And he turned to me and said, isn't that right, Ron? I go, yeah, I agree with you. That's the kind of, so that was my Ted Williams story.
Well, that's impressive. Certainly a memorable one. How many bonefish did you catch that day? Do you remember?
I don't remember. I think just maybe a couple. You know, the goal wasn't to fill the boat. And bonefish are pretty spooky fish, so and you got to catch them when the tide is right. There's a lot of things when you fish salt water that for a Minnesota kid to go down there and likes fishing, it's a total different ball game.
Mm-hmm.
Tides and different species and where they live. And so you just kind of long for the ride. But I do remember he lost one. That's when the blue smoke came out of his mouth. And then I do remember he landed one and changed the reel line in his reel, stuff like that. So
fascinating.
Yeah.
I've always had the desire to go down to Florida to do some tarpon fishing. That's still on my bucket list to do. Have you had the opportunity to do any tarpon fishing down there?
Yes, I have several times, and I fished with Jose Wahebe, who was just a wonderful guy, great TV host, great fishing guide down there. So I fished tarpon with him. I had a nice tarpon hooked on 15-pound test line that led me right into the harbor at Key West, Florida. And if you go, the big pillars, the dirt, log pillars, cement pillars, whatever they are, some of them are wood, some are cement, are covered with critters that attach there.
Yes.
They're real sharp. And I try to keep my
barnacles?
Line.
Are they barnacles?
Yeah, barnacles. I try to keep my line away from them and that big old tarpon.
Oh, no.
Finally, there's a whole bunch of people watching everything else.
Oh, no. I know where this is going.
Yeah, finally the line touches the barnacle and my tarpon was gone. But I have caught tarpon in Costa Rica many times with Ron Weber, the late Ron Weber from Arapaima. But, you know, you have a standing invitation to come to Isla Mirada to go tarpon fishing. And so you need to do that. They'll set you up, won't cost you a nickel once you get down there. They'll house you, feed you, guide you.
Well, sign me up for that.
Yeah, well.
Sounds like a good time.
Yeah,
no, that's on my list. You know how I like those big giant fish. That's
they mentioned that to me when I was just down there in December filming. So.
Well, what
Richard Stanzik, very, right. Very famous Richard Stanzik, who is a legend down there. He said, have Laura come down here.
Oh, well, thanks, Richard, if you're listening. I'll take you up on that. That's a very kind offer.
Yeah.
Hey there, Bill Shirk, the man about the woods. Propane, it's clean, efficient fuel produced right here in the United States. Schedule your propane service with a friend. Lakes Gas, a family-owned provider serving the upper Midwest for more than 60 years. 54 convenient locations in Minnesota and Wisconsin, now with offices in North Dakota and South Dakota, too. Lakes Gas employees live in the communities they serve, so you can expect personalized service from professionals. Oh, and the Lakes Gas offers competitive pricing without all the extras that tend to drive up fuel prices. Safe, dependable service. Lakes Gas, the right choice for your home, business, or farm. Visit lakesgas.com and join the family.
Hi, everybody. Ron Shera here again with another nifty story, this one about my favorite bank, the story of Star Bank. There's 10 of them in Minnesota, but here's where the plot thickens. A Star Bank is more than money. A Star Bank cares about its customers, cares about the community, whether it's town parades or the kids' baseball team. Why? Because Star Banks are locally owned. They treat you right. Quite a tale, wouldn't you say? How do I know? Because Star Bank is also our bank at Ron Shera Productions. Just another story with a happy ending. Star Bank, the bank that cares. Member FDIC. To learn more online, go to star.bank. So, anyway, where were we?
We were chatting about former baseball players that were sharing a day fishing with you, but I understand there's quite a few people that have had some really interesting careers that you had the opportunity to fish with. And one is, was a very famous actor.
Oh, yes.
Who was in a very popular movie, which was in the 90s, wasn't it, the movie?
I don't know, but a heck of a lot of people have seen it as The Grumpy Old Men.
Yes.
And it was filmed right in Minnesota, a lot of it in Wabasha, Minnesota. And Jack Lemmon, who we're talking about.
Yes.
I got invited to take him fishing one day because he was up here. They were doing some more filming. He was staying at the St. Paul Hotel. And so I met him on a small lake in White Bear Lake, and he was very gracious. He loved fishing. I did not know that about him. His son was along too, his adult son. And so they both were in my boat, and we went bass fishing, and we caught some bass. And his son caught a muskie, a small muskie, you know, like maybe a 25 incher. I didn't even know there were muskies in that little lake, but he was very gracious. I teased him a little bit. I said, geez, too bad Ann Margaret's not along here. He got it. But I guess my biggest impression is a couple of things. One, he seriously liked fishing, did a lot of it in California. And you don't know this about people. And they're bigger than life on a screen. You
sure.
Know? And he was very gracious as we stopped, went back to shore, a bunch of people waiting for him. They had sandwiches. They had a big table spread there. And he was just, you know, people fall over backwards to make sure he's having a good time. He was just very gracious man to be with. So that was kind of fun.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
And I have a nice picture of the two of us together. So that's in my office.
I have a fond memory, I guess, of the influence that Jack Lemmon in that movie had, which was, I just looked it up. The movie was out in 1993, Grumpy Old Men. If you haven't seen it, it's kind of an iconic film. But during the 2018 Super Bowl, when it was here in Minneapolis, that was 2018, right? Yes, I think it was. Gosh, how I feel like it was just yesterday, and I say 2018, and it's already so many years ago. But of course, thousands of people came to Minneapolis to enjoy our Super Bowl, and many of them and our city wanted people to experience the Bold North and all the things that we do in the middle of winter when it's sub-zero. We're still outside enjoying all the things that nature has to offer, and one of which was ice fishing.
Oh, yes.
And I had the pleasure of joining Lord Fletcher's was in on this big experience that they would take people out ice fishing. And so they asked if I would come out for an afternoon to hang with some folks that were visiting that had probably never been walked on ice before. So that alone was an experience. And they were driving people out on the ice on Polaris side-by-sides and razors and things like that. So that alone to them was terrifying. So that was kind of fun to see the faces of people going out on the ice. They're like, we're driving on the ice. They're like, so nervous. But they had a bunch of ice houses out on the lake and this little village they'd set up. And of course it was decorated so cute. And all heated on the inside. And many of them, due to the movie Grumpy Old Men, wanted to sit on an old bucket and sit outside and freeze their butt off and ice fish that way because of that movie.
Isn't that
I think was the most surprising thing that I noticed, and how many people did not want to be in the ice house. They were kind of surprised. They thought it was cool. They're like, oh, it's cool. It's warm. Oh my gosh. There's a hole in the ice. You can see down that.
Right.
There's TVs, you know, all sorts of stuff, but they wanted to be out on that ice bucket. Just like Grumpy Old Men.
That reminds me, during that Super Bowl, and his name escapes me now, I'm embarrassed. who was the very famous football announcer who was a former coach for Oakland? John Madden, yes. He was here for the Super Bowl. And
what year was that?
I don't know. He was here for the Super Bowl, not as a coach. He was an announcer for CBS, I think it was. Very, very well-known announcer. He didn't like flying, so he traveled in a motorhome.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
He wanted to try ice fishing, like your friends you were talking about. They thought this was really something, and he wanted to take his motorhome out on Mille Lacs. Well, they said, no, you're not taking that.
Oh, boy.
But anyway, I got to interview him about his reaction to ice fishing, and he was very, very funny, of course.
Yes.
Like, basically, you Minnesota people are a little starved for entertainment up here, but and he liked to go out and sit on that bucket and then say things. When it comes to ice fishing for the rest of the world, they kind of look at us and go, you got a full set of teeth and everything else.
I know, to stare at a hole in the ice seems a little strange, but I think they realize the community involvement in it, of course, when you have a village on the ice and you've got neighbors, and then you go up to Mille Lacs and they actually have street names on the ice.
They didn't this year.
No, unfortunately, they didn't.
Let me tell you, I have another very famous baseball player I took out fishing, Billy Martin. Now, a lot of folks won't know who he was, no longer with us, but a very famous ball player for Yankees, and then he went on for a career at managing baseball teams, including the Twins at one point. And he got fired from most of those jobs. Or if he didn't get fired, he got into a fight, made a lot of bad publicity with people and bars, whatever. He was a different mold. But he was the manager for Kansas City when Kansas City came up to Twin Cities to play the Twins, and I got invited to take him fishing because they had a day for doing nothing before they got up here. So I met him on a dock that was owned by the one and only Sid Hartman. I didn't know Sid even knew there was such a thing as the St. Croix River. And Sid had a boat. I didn't know he even knew there was such a thing as boating. He spent all of his life in a locker room. But I met Sid down there first. Billy wasn't there yet. Sid was on his boat, turned the key, and the battery was dead because he'd left the key on. And the last time he'd used the boat was who knows when.
Oh, no.
A month or two ago. And so Sid, being the perfect host, ran next door, rented a pontoon, then came back to me and said, "Do you know how to run a pontoon?" I go, "Yeah." He says, "Well, you go over there and get it and take Billy out on that pontoon to go fishing." He said, I'm not going to go with you. I'm going to go back to the office." I said, "Well, okay." So I had the pontoon there, and here comes Billy down the gangplank to go fishing. And behind him was a friend of Billy's here in Bloomington, who had a Howard Wong restaurant, very famous restaurant in downtown on the strip in Bloomington. Howard Wong was a multimillionaire who, when Billy came to town, Howard was his personal bartender, and Howard was carrying a big box of refreshments.
Oh boy.
And there, hanging on Billy's arm as he came down the gangplank, was a gorgeous woman who, I found out later, had flown in from Kansas City to spend the weekend with Billy, apparently an exceptional baseball fan. So,
yes, I'm sure that's what it was. Or she just came for the refreshments.
Thank you. You got that. Anyway, so I had never fished that stretch to the St. Croix, but I'm not going to tell Billy that. So I stand there and I go, "Billy," I said, "see that point over there on the Wisconsin side?" I go, "We're going to start there, see if we can get a walleye or something." So, okay. So everybody gets on board and I go over towards that point. When I got over there, it actually looked better than I thought because a nice sandbar coming off there goes into deeper water. So I anchored the pontoon, got set up, and I brought my own fishing tackle. So I gave a rod to Billy and I grabbed a jig and put a minnow on his jig. And I told him that you cast out there and onto that sandbar and hop it down into the deeper water and see what we get. So he made a cast. I turned around to put a minnow on my own jig, and I sensed a commotion going on. I turned around and looked, and Billy's fishing rod is already bent over. And you can tell, because I have plenty of experience, he wasn't snagged. He had a fish on. So, oh my gosh, we're all excited now. What is it? Well, in the St. Croix River, it could be one of many things. It could be
a
catfish, a bullhead, a northern pike, a sheephead. It could even be a walleye. Anyway, we're excited. It's a fish. So Billy's reeling up, and finally it shows up, and oh my God, it is like about a 24-inch walleye.
Whoa!
On his very first cast. So went at it, take some pictures. Where everybody's happy, high-fiving, and we let the fish go. So then Billy now thinks I walk on water because his very first cast.
He's like, "There's more of this, right?"
Yeah. So he turns to Howard. He says, "Howard," He says, fix me my usual. And Ron, you get to have whatever you want. Well, Laura, you don't argue with Billy Martin. So I had my usual. I don't even remember what it was. All I remember is that's the last fish we caught that day.
Okay. Was it a cocktail cruise for the rest of the afternoon?
I think that's what it turned into.
Yeah, I bet it did. I was hoping his lady friend was going to have the biggest catch of the day. I mean, that would have been the best.
Well, he got the biggest. Billy got the biggest. And, you know, it's one of those things. But you never forget it. I always say we didn't get into a fight anyway because Billy was famous for fighting. So that's my Billy Martin story.
Well, you've had the opportunity to spend a lot of time with some of well-known Minnesota Twins, such as Kent Herbeck.
Right.
I remember as a young girl, Kent Herbeck, and who else would you also, you'd go pheasant hunting with this group. Why am I not remembering the other names?
Gary Gaetti.
That's what it was. Gaetti, Kent Herbeck. And was there another one in there?
Well, there were several. I used to hunt with some of the Viking players.
Yes.
Who went on to coaching careers. Jack, he just got fired from Washington Nationals. Jack Del Rio.
Oh, that's right.
What was interesting for me, pheasant hunting, was some of those Viking players who were in their prime on the field, starters for the Vikings, had trouble walking in the tall grass because their knees were shot.
Really?
Yeah, and so to play the game, they would get their knees shot up, you know, before the game.
Crazy.
And it was crazy. I mean, here I am with Jack Del Rio. Those guys could run circles around me, but not pheasant hunting. I thought that was very interesting. And Kent Herbeck and Gary, I fished with Kent down in Fort Myer where the Twins were playing in his day. He had a little private lake right near the stadium, right by a big Coca-Cola plant. I remember that. So we went fishing there, caught some bass. But when we hunted with he and Gary Gaetti, Gary, delightful guy, wonderful. But at that point, he was going through a very religious moment in his life. Mm. And so between fields, he would sit in the back of the vehicle as I drove, and he would read little scriptures in his little Bible. Hmm. Now, he didn't preach to you about it. That was just his thing. But that he would read the Bible between pheasant fields, I found kind of interesting.
Oh, that is interesting.
Yeah.
And you also shared the boat with Dennis Green, former Vikings coach.
Yeah, I forgot about Dennis. We fished together many times. Mm-hmm. And a wonderful guy. He appreciated that opportunity. And so I often got to get a pass to be right on the sidelines during a Vikings game just because I was a friend of his.
Nice.
And we had some good times. When it comes to politicians, I took Governor Arne Carlson fishing one time, and he wasn't much into fishing. I don't know who talked him into doing it or whatever, but he couldn't cast too well. And of course, when you got somebody like that in your boat, you want to show them a good time. You're hoping they could catch something.
Sure. Yeah.
So I kept casting around, throwing spinner baits. Well, he'd throw a spinner bait, but it wouldn't start reeling fast enough, and it'd be down in the weeds, and he'd be pulling weeds in. I'm pulling bass in, and it's always interesting to me, anytime I've taken a governor out, is his security people are in another boat behind us. I don't know what they thought I was going to do, throw him in with an anchor around his anchor around his ankles or something. I don't know. But
those fish are vicious.
You know, that told me, you know, it's kind of a waste of my tax money, but who's to say? But they finally... when we got done, I don't think he caught a fish. And I got done. Some of the game wardens and other security people, they had some name for me that I had, what'd they call me? I can't remember, but basically I had caught all the fish before the governor did. So,
Oh, no.
Yeah. But that he was a good sport. And there were a couple other governors that
You've done a lot of pheasant openers with governors.
Some. I quit doing the governor's fishing opener quite a few years ago as my dad and brothers wanted to come up fishing too. And you go to the governor's fishing opener, you got to participate in their things and you can't have your relatives join in on all that. Mm-hmm. So I finally just quit doing that. And our fishing openers became father and brothers. And actually it still goes on today. Who knows, 40 years later or whatever it is. Our fishing opener for us is daughters, cousins, brothers, hangers-on.
Some cold weather. Yeah, some warm weather.
It'd be whatever. Fishing opener in Minnesota is whatever nature throws at you.
That is true.
There's nothing quite like Minnesota winter. Whether you want to try ice fishing, ice skating, or ice boating, make sure you know the risks and how to play it safe on the ice. Measure ice thickness frequently and never go out alone. Always wear your life jacket or a float coat and have ice picks readily accessible in case you fall through. Playing on the ice can be fun, but it's never 100% safe. Learn how you can play safe before you go out. Safety is always in season. A message from the Minnesota DNR.
Got the winter blues? Start planning your summer. Plan on fun and get out in the water with your boat club. Your boat club offers boat club memberships and daily rentals with access to over 40 bodies of water and over 400 brand new boats to enjoy. Whether you want to cruise on a pontoon, create waves in a speedboat, or reel in a big one on a fishing boat, your boat club has got you covered. Unlimited boating memberships are available now, starting at just $1.99 a month after a one-time initiation. Life is better on the water. Find out more today at yourboatclub.com.
If you haven't experienced all that the Minnesota Horse and Hunt Club has to offer, you're missing out. Located in Prior Lake, Minnesota, with pheasant hunting and dog training 30 minutes from the Minneapolis Metro, the Horse and Hunt Club has full memberships available now and so much to offer. Besides upland bird hunting year-round, they're open 7 days a week. Trigger's Bar and Grill has awesome food and great drink specials. Sunday brunch is always a favorite. Plus, live music and events are going on all the time. Bring your friends and try one of the heated sporting clay stands this winter. Go to horseandhunt.com for more information.
How about Bud Grant? Any good Bud Grant stories?
Well, yes, but never took him fishing. I wasn't into fishing, but when he first started coaching and I was writing for the paper, and because of his interest in the outdoors, he noticed who I was. And of course, everybody knew who he was. So I had a chance at one point to invite him turkey hunting in April, because the Vikings weren't doing anything in April. So he and I flew out to the Black Hills, and I took him on his very first turkey hunt. And I lined up one of my good friends out there to be his guide. And I went one way, and coach and his guide went another way. I think we hunted for a couple of days. I got a turkey. He did not. But he still enjoyed it, and he became addicted to turkey hunting from then on and started going to Kansas and Minnesota and Wisconsin other times. So we had that relationship. I took him to Iowa quail hunting one time, and he got some quail. He really enjoyed that too. He liked to roam off by himself, which was okay. Mm-hmm. Quail hunting, you kind of do that anyway. Go down a fence row, you know. Met him in North Dakota pheasant hunting. My most vivid memory is the Vikings were in the playoffs and were going to play on Sunday the Cleveland Browns for a championship game for that part of there before they went to the Super Bowl kind of thing. And I don't know, just through talking with Bud Grant, I mentioned I had a great spot to hunt ducks just up in North in Anoka County, loaded with mallards. So we arranged, he would meet me at like 6 a.m. up in Anoka County on Saturday morning, the day before the big game.
Hmm.
We're sitting there in a duck blind, not doing much shooting because my duck blind wasn't so good and these mallards could basically see us.
Oh, no.
So they were flying all around. We had them all around us, but very few of them were dumb enough to fly within shotgun range. Anyway, we talked and chatted. I know he enjoyed just being out there, but I said to him, I said, this is typical Bud Grant. I said, Bud, I said, most of Minnesota are thinking about tomorrow's game. And they're thinking that you are probably in your office designing a few more secretive plays to fool the Browns tomorrow. In a typical Bud Grant style, he said, no, listen, if I haven't figured it out by now, the next 24 hours won't make a bit of difference.
Oh, good point.
Yeah. So he wasn't worried about it. And the next day, the Vikings beat the Browns, something like 14
points. That's impressive. We had the opportunity to shoot some sporting clays with Bud Grant and his son.
You're right.
That was a fun memory. I had a little bit of an issue with my gun that day. It jammed. But before that happened, he was using my shotgun. And I don't know if it was his son or somebody that was with him said that was the first, which is hard for me to believe, but they told me that was his first sporting clay pigeon he had ever shot. And that was with my gun.
That doesn't surprise me because, I mean, he was an avid duck hunter, avid pheasant hunter, mostly ducks and waterfowl. What I remember about that, because we had
I was shooting so well until my gun jammed?
Well, yes, but I was shooting even better than Bud Grant was, but the official scorer.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Bud Grant would shoot, miss. The official scorer would say, you dusted it, Bud. That's
exactly.
A good one for you. So before it was all over, he beat me by one.
Well, it was a total setup.
He could hardly hit any of them.
I know.
Damn.
I know. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
We were totally duped in that whole thing.
Like,
it'd be really nice if the two of you could be there.
Yes.
So we're like, sure,
hey,
we'll
Bud
stop
Grant,
by.
Bud Grant beat Ron Sheridan shooting sporting clays. What the heck?
I know. Someone had, I don't know, with the pencil was writing some odd scores down, that's for sure. But
yeah.
I was like, well, that's such a joy that A, to be able to do that with those two, but also that he was able to shoot some sporting clays that so late in life. And he did get one with my shotgun. So we know he at least got one. For sure.
Indeed.
For sure. Well, Dad, I feel like we could go on and on about all these outdoor adventures you've had with some really interesting people over all these years.
I'm trying to think. I took an astronaut fishing. And,
oh, that's right. Which one?
Wally Schirra is the astronaut who said, call up this guy and tell him about your calendar idea. And that's how it all started. But Wally was a delightful guy. You could, after you spend some time with him in a boat, you could understand why he was one of the first astronauts the country asked to go up into outer space.
One of NASA's first 7 astronauts, the Mercury 7, it was called.
As we say, he had the right stuff, and he certainly did.
Wow.
There you go.
That's impressive. And your calendar's still running strong today.
It is, 30-some years later.
That's impressive. I'm trying to think if I've had any fun celebrity outings.
Well, you were with me. You were fishing with me.
Yeah, that's right.
I
mean,
a few times.
I could tell a lot of those stories.
Yeah, you outfished me, I think, maybe one time, as I remember.
Yes, it was just that one time.
Mm-hmm.
It was, well, one of my favorite memories is when I finally did outshoot you I think we were playing a little bit of game of trap shooting, and it was one time and one time only.
Well, I don't remember that at all.
I have a photo of it. I kept the photo.
You can.
And the scorecard.
You can do all kinds of things with those photos these days.
was not photoshopped. I think that was the only time I've ever been able to beach in some sporting clays. But
I'm going to tell a story about you.
Oh, no.
As a young girl who would go with her dad fishing. We lived on near Crooked Lake in Anoka County, and you were willing to go with me. But you always wanted to catch bass on topwater lures. And I said, Laura, that's fun. I love it too, but sometimes the bass aren't looking up. But you persisted. And I remember finally, after catching nothing, you finally got one on a topwater lure. And that changed your life. You, to this day, you want to catch bass on topwater lures.
It's one of my favorite things to do. That's part of the skill of casting correctly. And I think that's what keeps my brain occupied. So when I've said this before, when you're just jigging away for walleye at the bottom of the lake, that for some reason somewhat bores me to death. But if I can cast and I have to get it exactly by the dock or right in front of that log.
Okay.
Then you just see the explosion. And half the time I'm setting the hook too fast on topwater bass fishing. So I've learned a skill to slow myself down in that. And it was Ryan Johnson he's a fishing guide, but real estate agent actually. And he's a great guy. And I went fishing with him on his secret lake, which I'm going to see if we can go fish the secret lake. I have been sworn to secrecy on this lake, and it's also on private property. So that's the only way to access it. However, he took me out and I caught that 6.1 pound bass, and that was on top water. It was with a frog. But what he said is when that fish comes up like an explosive dynamite, I'm very fast to like set that hook. And he's like, just say, there's one, and then set the hook.
Uh-huh.
And that's all you have to do. And from there on out, I was catching some bass. And now that Dan and I have a home in Austin, Texas, you know how much I wanted to catch this big Texas bass. That's been on my list for a long time as well. And there's a lake down there that, according to Bassmaster Classic, is rated the number one bass lake in the country right now. So I've been looking up some fishing guides to see if I can catch one in the 8, 9, 10 pound range.
Something tells me you will.
Well, you just got to get it done. I have these like little goals that you just, I want to catch a big rainbow trout. There's a stream in Georgia that I had my eye on. That's on my list. And this lake in Texas is on my list. And elk hunting is on my list. I'm working on that. So slowly but surely, I will chip away at all these little micro goals I have for the outdoors.
How about putting something a little cheaper on your list? Like maybe catching a bluegill or something.
You tell me about it. I mean, you have to, looking up elk hunting, I'm like, who can afford this? This is not a hobby.
How
this
about
is
fishing
a car.
Off a dock or something like that?
That's true.
And getting back to what you said about walleye fishing, don't you ever come over to my house
and eat it
and have fresh walleye. Since it's so boring to catch him with a jig.
Well, I mean, it's fun. When we went out with Brian Brosdahl, he is really fun to fish with as well. Like, he's very entertaining in the fishing boat, and they keep you moving. And
he also outfished me dearly, and not once, but twice or three times.
Oh, yeah, he's impressive, too. Very impressive. His fishing skills. But anyway, there's lots of adventures out there to be had, and of course, the memory is always with who you're spending the time with is really what it comes down to. You never remember how many fish you caught. It's always the people. So.
Very, very well said. And I think I've told you everything I know, Laura.
Just today
Yeah.
If we were just to talk about fish alone, we'd be here all day.
Well, I know a lot. I just can't think of it.
All right. Just not right now anyway. All right, Dad. Well, good to have you back at home here in Minnesota, and glad you had a nice time in Palm Springs. And
thank you. And
good to have you back on the podcast.
I'll send you a picture when they have the statue of my hole-in-one.
The bronze statue. How many feet is the statue? Have they determined that if it's going to be 12 feet?
Well, it's going to be
maybe
bigger.
Maybe 15 foot, like a Paul Bunyan size, statue. Thank you again, Dad, for joining us on episode 200. So good to have you back. Once again, thank you to our sponsors, Kinetico, Lakes Gas, Star Bank, Minnesota DNR, Minnesota Horse and Hunt Club, and Your Boat Club. Last but not least, remember,
always introduce your kid to the great outdoors.